We are, at this moment, in the middle of a crisis. Drug prices are simply out of control and superbugs are on the rise, making drugs less effective. However, out-of-control prices are the first issue of concern right now because millions of people are having to make do without the drugs they need because they can't afford them. Enter generics, the low-cost option for those that can't afford expensive brand name drugs. But before we get super excited about generics, we have to ask the question, do they work? On this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we are going to be looking primarily at that question, but we are also going to be digging into the process of how generics are made, approved, and brought to market.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any particular information you get is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX Inc., a black activist, advocacy, and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for black people in America through education, culture shift, and economics. You can check them out at www.pactsinc.org. That's pactsinc.org, where you can leave a comment, become a member, make a donation, become a member, tell a friend to tell a friend to become a member or make a donation, shop at Amazon Smile after you become a member and make a friend and tell a friend to become a member and tell a separate friend to make a donation and then alternate what you told both those friends so they both become members and make donations. You can do whatever it is and you should do whatever it is that you can do to help them because they're doing whatever they can to help you. Take the surveys, check out the Learning Center. Even if you don't do none of that other stuff, still check out the Learning Center. There's a lot of useful information on there. And without further ado, we bringing to you this show. Brand versus generics. What's the dealio? Will they kill you slow? The generic drug industry. For many people, they are the answer to the problem of overpriced drugs. In the minds of many, they are exactly the same as brand drugs at a fraction of the price. And this is supported by the statements of many in the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, pharmacists, insurance companies, and generic manufacturing companies. But all of them have a vested interest in making those statements. The Food and Drug Administration, for starters, will face major backlash and a loss of credibility if they stood in the way of cheaper alternatives to brand drugs. People would say that they are working on the payroll of pharmaceutical companies, which is a problem that they are already facing with the revolving door that many top FDA officials go through as they transition from drug companies to the FDA and then back to drug companies again. But the fact that most people don't really understand what the FDA does isn't helping matters much in that regard. But as a regulatory agency backed by the U.S. government, maintaining public trust is paramount. And the FDA will do anything to maintain that rapidly diminishing trust. Admitting that generic drugs are not a cheaper copy of brand drugs after generic drugs have been used for so long would destroy the agency's credibility. This also explains why the agency has been so resistant to admitting any sort of mistakes on their end. The Ranbaxy situation is a prime example of this, in which they finally, after nearly a decade of investigating, with clear evidence, decided to hold a corporation criminally liable for its dangerous generic pharmaceuticals in 2013. The Wellbutrin XL recall in 2012 is another example of this, as the FDA had been first notified about the problem with the generic drug more than 5 years before it took action. Pharmacists also face a credibility crisis. For many years, many of them have championed generic drugs as being the same as brands, and they are regularly recognized as the experts on pills. While many pharmacists will change their minds and opinions when they notice a problem, many will not, and there is currently a disagreement between many pharmacists about the generic drug FDA regulations and how bioequivalence is and should actually be measured. This is mostly a professional pride and ego deal, however, and nothing of the scope of the public pressure the FDA faces. But one can only imagine the embarrassment the field would feel if generic drugs were not actually equivalent, seeing as how they are viewed as the pill experts in society, a label that should probably be attached a little more to chemists. But anyways, they would, however, also face backlash from the activist community, who would undoubtedly accuse them of being in bed with the pharmaceutical companies, a claim that they are also already facing more and more, although not to the extent of the FDA. Insurance companies aren't really worried about credibility. They're worried about profits. And the simple truth is, the more people utilizing generics, the less money insurance companies pay to pharmaceutical companies. This point is driven home by the fact that many insurance companies have created health plans that only provide generic drugs. The price points for these plans are often at a low enough level that you can reasonably surmise that they are targeting everyone that isn't wealthy. Insurance companies also absorb a chunk of the cost of brands into their operating expenses while passing on a substantial portion to its customers in the form of increased premiums and copays. If the insurance company pays out less money to pharmaceutical companies by purchasing generics instead of brands, then they keep more of their income as profit. And finally, we have the generic manufacturing industry. They have a clear-cut and obviously vested interest in equalizing the thoughts of people that consider brands versus generics. Since they make generic drugs, the existence of the entire generic drug industry hinges on the public believing there is no difference between generics and brands. On the other hand, you have the brand name manufacturing companies. They are seemingly the only ones pushing back on this narrative on a large scale, and they obviously are concerned about their own profits. The idea that brands and generics are essentially the same hurts their industry just as much as it helps the generics. Seeing as how so many brand companies have raised the price of their drugs to such a disgusting and prohibitive level, it makes sense that they have become the bad guys in all of this. And I'm not going to suggest anything different. To be sure, they are definitely wrong for what they are doing and for what they have been doing with regards to the pricing of their drugs. But they aren't the only bad guys here. And given the games being played on all sides of this issue, I say there are no good guys in both intention and activity to be seen. When a drug is being made, a company spends millions of dollars doing research on it. Money is spent figuring out the what, where, how, and why of a particular disease in question. Over a period of many years to decades, a disease may be studied by a company and various independent researchers before a breakthrough happens. When that breakthrough occurs, various trials are conducted to figure out the best way to turn this new knowledge into a working therapy, starting with animals. This is significant because all medicines are toxic. If given in a dose that's too high, all chemical medicines will kill you. And so will most natural medicines. If given in a dose that's too low, all medicines will be ineffective and will only serve to create new strands of bacteria that are resistant to the medicine being administered. The superbug. If given on an elevated level that isn't high enough to kill, you might still see some really bad adverse effects. So animal trials are used to figure out dosages and fine-tuned understanding of how medicines will interact with an illness in a living body. This could last for years to decades unless a condition of emergency is declared, during which the restrictions on medications are severely reduced and the goal of bringing drugs to market faster is brought more to the forefront. Because when people are really sick, the government and the pharmaceutical companies don't want to spend time really making sure a drug is safe. They would rather spend time putting the drugs out that could potentially treat the illness. You could argue good or bad about that, but that's not the purpose of what this is. But before animal trials even begin, companies patent all the chemicals and processes they are using or could be used to make the drug so that they are the only ones that can make it. Drugs made in the U.S. at all stages of the production process are subject to unannounced, random, and rigorous FDA inspections. And the guidelines for acceptable facilities, protocols, and employee behavior are pretty tight. complying with all of these regulations, performing all of these trials, doing all of the necessary research, patenting the dozens of different chemical variations and manufacturing processes, and training employees all takes a lot of money. These are the reasons brand name companies give for why they charge so much, and why we should be fair in understanding that these are expenses that they have to undertake in order to produce a drug, and they should be able to recoup some of those losses, all of those losses. They should also not treat us like we're stupid. We understand that it costs money to make drugs, but we also understand that there is no reason why the top 10 pharmaceutical CEOs make between $17.5 and $38 million a year, according to the Wall Street Journal. Number 25 on that list makes $7.25 million a year. Clearly, these companies have room to spare on their bottom lines. Now, where it gets interesting is what happens as that patent nears expiration. You see, drug patents last for 20 years from the time of submission, which is usually years before the drug actually hits the market. Barring a number of maneuvers that would lengthen that patent, once it expires, the drug becomes available to be genericized. And I know that's not a word, but it's going to be a word for this show. Now, in addition to having a patent on a drug, pharmaceutical companies are also given exclusivity by the FDA. Now, exclusivity means that only one company will get approval and permission to sell a drug in the U.S. by the FDA, effectively making it a monopoly and conferring additional protections to the drug. A company can have the patent and exclusivity, or they can have the patent with no exclusivity, or they can have exclusivity with no patent. Now, exclusivity protections are shorter in duration than patents and offer virtually no protection from things like reverse engineering and process stealing. But as soon as the patent expires, generic drug companies go to work. One thing to keep in mind here is that when a patent expires, companies are allowed to try to recreate the drug, but they are not given the recipe for making the drug. The data that is available shows them what's in the brand drug, but not the quantities, the sizes, the temperatures, the times, or the pressures necessary to turn those recipe items, those individual components, into a working therapeutic treatment. Now, leading up to the expiration of a patent, generic drug companies will be reverse engineering a brand drug in order to find out how it's put together. This process takes a lot of time and resources, but not nearly as much as creating a new drug from scratch, which is what the lower prices are attributed to. After the patent has expired, generic drug companies fill out forms and submit information to the FDA for approval to create a generic version of the brand drug whose patent has expired. If they are approved, the generic company receives a brief period of exclusivity, which is used to solidify profits for the company. Generic prices during this exclusive period are lower, but are oftentimes still remain elevated somewhat for maximum profit. Now, in order for a generic to gain approval, it has to prove that it is the pharmaceutical equivalent to the brand, meaning it has to show that it has the same type of delivery, tablet or injection, time-release technology, and a similar effect in the body. The manufacturer has to show that they are capable of making the drug correctly and consistently. The active ingredient has to be the same and delivered to the proper place. Inactive ingredients have to be safe. And the drug has to be stable, meaning it won't break down over time. The container that the drug is shipped in and sold in has to be appropriate as well. And the label has to be the same as the brand label in terms of the information available on the label. All of the relevant patents and exclusivities attached to the brand also have to be expired. Now, all of that sounds great, right? Right. Well, especially if everyone is being honest and transparent. And you hope that that is the case, considering people's lives are on the line. Unfortunately, what a lot of researchers, regulators, and investigators are finding out is that everyone is not being honest and transparent. The book Bottle of Lies by Catherine Eban, which I reviewed in the last show, is all about the dishonesty in the generic drug industry. She presents a strong argument built through 10 years of investigation that the generic drug industry is sacrificing health for profit. And instead of learning how to operate in compliance with the FDA, they have learned how to appear as if they are. But what scope of the FDA's regulation. To start with, almost all of the data the FDA is given on a drug is presented to the FDA by the corporation seeking to sell the drugs or the main ingredients for the drugs. The system is built on the honor system. The one check the FDA has to make sure that things are legit is its random and unannounced inspections. The problem with this is that the FDA only does these inspections in the USA. Foreign plants and corporations have announced visits, which are usually planned out weeks or even months in advance, and has been the case in India and China. Companies have taken that time to create elaborate systems to fool inspectors. This includes taking them to dummy sites that aren't actually used to manufacture anything. The equivalency data that the FDA relies on has on some occasions been shown to be that of the brand data resubmitted as the generic. Although these instances might be rare, there is a range of acceptability in generic therapeutic effects that seems to swing wildly depending on who you talk to. Some pharmacists and researchers say that a generic drug has to have a therapeutic effect between 80% and 125% of the brand, which is a pretty wild 45% area of acceptability. Now, this is wild because, once again, drugs are toxic and only provide medical effects in a limited range. And as mentioned before, too much will kill you, too little won't treat the issue and will cause resistant bacteria to form. But there are others that say that the range is only 10% once you perform all of the complex math necessary for the data checks. And while 10% is definitely better than 45%, it's still not the same. If someone is 5% taller than someone else, you wouldn't say that they were the same height. So if a drug is 5% weaker than another drug, you shouldn't say that they are the same drug. The FDA doesn't make its bioequivalence data available from what I could find, but given the fact that modern experts are still arguing about what they mean, I doubt me looking at them with my lack of expertise would help much. Now, time release is also an issue, as we saw with Wellbutrin XL. Generic drugs don't always release their drugs along the same time frame as brands. This could be due to the fact that generics don't have to have the same release mechanisms or the same excipients, which are the non-active ingredients. While the non-active ingredients have to be safe, we cannot ignore the fact that they could have on the way that an active ingredient may work in a given situation inside of the body. Now, doctors overseas have been compensating for lower strength generics by prescribing what would otherwise be considered insane amounts of drugs. Here in America, a growing list of concerns is being tabulated as people see negative side effects when they shift from brands to generics. And companies like Ranbaxy have been found guilty of felony crimes involving manufacturing drugs and distribution. And as the brands push their drug prices higher, the demand for generics grows louder, making regulators and well-meaning whistleblowers appear to be the bad guys. But the fact is, there is a level of concern that is healthy when it comes to all medication. If we accept the idea that you get what you pay for, or the idea that corporations are driven by greed and profit, then we should be looking extra closely at corporations that are willing to produce expensive drugs for very, very cheap prices. The drugs they produce aren't the same as the brands in some cases. And in most cases, that's okay because it's close enough. But brand or generic, we should take care to thoroughly research the toxic substances that are being used to treat us. FDA inspections are public knowledge, and if a drug or its active ingredient was made out of the country at a plant that hasn't been inspected in a number of years, India or China should be especially concerning given that their history with generic manufacturers in those parts of the world, then I would exercise extreme caution. Now, once again, the website to search inspections will be linked below. So the takeaways for me for this are similar to the takeaways from last week with Bottle of Lies. And it's plain and simple. As a black person, I already have a natural distrust of the medical, the entire healthcare industry. I'll be upfront and blunt about that. My bias is right out there and open for all to see. But it's not without good reason. Like we get pretty good evidence on a consistent basis that we need to take more precautions with what we ingest, what we put in our bodies, what we allow other people to put in our bodies. And when you just begin to really dive into the rabbit hole of looking at what's going on with these generic drugs, looking at some of the negative side effects that are being brought forward, when you start reading some of the reports, some of the FDA reports, when you start looking at what some pharmacists are saying and some of the reviews and things the various drugs are getting, you can't help but be alarmed. And this is one of those things where I don't care if somebody says, well, out of a million people, you might have 50,000 complaints. In my opinion, when it comes to health and wellness, that's too much, especially if a lot of those complaints are caused by issues that could and should be prevented in terms of, in terms of making sure that the manufacturing of the drug is done in a facility that's up to code, making sure that the environment that the drug is manufactured in is up to code, making sure that the inspections and the data that are done are honest and transparent and clear, not manipulated in any way, shape, form, or fashion, making sure that the people that are making the drugs understand the significance of the job they have, and making sure that they actually give a damn. Because far too frequently, we've seen various reports where people will say, as was said in a Bottle of Lies, when the Indian drug manufacturers were talking about the AIDS medications that they were sending down to South Africa and talking about how the drugs were ineffective, they said, who cares? They're just black people. So as a black person, I am skeptical, and I think any healthy, well-researched black person would be skeptical and a little bit hesitant and cautious about the healthcare industry. Now, that doesn't mean be stupid with it, but that does mean make sure that you take care to understand as much as you can about what's going on in your body and what's going on, what's being put in your body. There's this big talk right now about food, but nobody's talking about medicines. And that becomes especially dangerous when you look at some of the negative side effects that some of these medications can have. And when you consider the fact that a good chunk of black people have insurance plans that will only provide them generic medications. So we have a big recipe for disaster here. And it's the same thing I say every week. The only way out, in my opinion, is to take the time to invest in black-owned pharmaceutical companies that actually care about black people. And it doesn't have to be in the form of a corporation. It could be in the form of a non-governmental organization, an NGO. It could be in the form of a non-profit organization. It could be in the form of anything. But we need something that actually cares about our people in the labs, with chemists, with doctors, with researchers, with all of these other people figuring out how to make these drugs, how to make them safely, how to make them responsibly, how to make them consistently, how to make them correctly, and how to make them affordably for black people. And we need to do that ASAP. This is arguably more important than the food issues that we're having, even though they're both pretty important. You can't live without food, obviously. But I would argue to say that with the amount of black people going on insulin because they're diabetic, with the amount of black people going on blood pressure medications, which I believe one of the medications that recently had problems was a blood pressure medications, with the amount of black people having AIDS issues, because the AIDS thing is still blowing up in our community, with the amount of black people taking medication on a regular and consistent basis for prolonged, lifelong problems, we need to take care that we are taking every necessary precaution when it comes to the types of pills and chemicals and medicinal therapies that we ingest. And there's just no other way around that. I don't know that there's any other thing that can be done, because you can't legislate good behavior. These people want profit and they don't really give a damn about you. Not like that. And the only way to ensure that they're doing what they need to do and not doing what they need to do to get around the system is to take on that process for yourself and figure it out and do it for yourself and for your people. And that's one of the things that I'm always like, if I win $1 million, there are a couple things, not $1 million, because $1 million ain't gonna do it in the pharmaceutical industry. But if I won a large chunk of money, there are a couple things that I would take care of. One of them will most certainly be pharmaceuticals for Black people. I mean, I would do my best to take care of the entire healthcare industry for Black people, but pharmaceuticals especially, because far too many of us are on drugs, daily drugs, lifelong therapies for issues that aren't going to get cleared up because of various lifestyle decisions and dietary decisions that we've made. And until we can get people to make better dietary and lifestyle decisions, we need to make sure that they're getting the best quality medication that they can. So I'm not telling anybody not to take their drugs. I'm telling you to be cautious and do your research. I'm telling you to pay attention to what's happening after you take the drug. Are you getting better? Are you experiencing new side effects? Did you get transitioned from one brand to another generic and all of a sudden you started to feel some type of way? Pay attention to those things and bring those things up to your pharmacist, your doctor, whoever it is, and don't just let them explain it away with a hand wave. Like, be in their face about it, because it's your life. And so that's all I got to say about that. We tried to cram a decent amount of information into this show in a brief period of time, the same way we do every week. There's obviously a lot that was left out, but you know, the internet is an amazing place. Google is your friend. So if your interest has been piqued, your appetite has been wet, go and do the research and figure it out. If you have other opinions about what's going on, what's being said, go ahead and leave a comment in the show. Tell me what you think. Tell me what you think about what's going on. Are generics the savior? Am I completely off base? How are you feeling about this whole thing? Let me know in the comments or on the Freedom Train website, Facebook page, whatever. And I'll see you next week.
Lessons from the screen. What we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons. Give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
All right, I want to thank you guys once again for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen right here on the Freedom Train Network. Remember to go show the Freedom Train Network some love, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Spelled just like it sounds. If you can't spell it, I don't know what to tell you. But make sure you also go ahead and check out the Freedom Train Radio app. If you got an Android, we got an app. And if you got an Android and your Android ain't got the app on it, then you ain't cool. And that's all I'm going to say about that. It's in the App Store. Search Freedom Train Radio. You'll see the logo, the Choo Choo Train, calling your name. So go ahead and get that dirt. Make sure you show all of the Freedom Train Radio network shows some love. Give them all a hug. Leave a comment on all of the shows that you like. And even the shows that you don't like, leave a comment still telling them you don't like them and you don't like they suck a fish fried eggs. And I also want to take more time to tell you guys to go and check out our sponsors, PAX Inc., PACTSINC.org, PAXINC.org. Show them some love. And drop a line on the Freedom Train website. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. Let us know what you want to hear. Let us know what shows you think we should try to put together for you. The number one, the world's first Black, pro-Black podcast directory right here. You know what it is. You know what it does. And we look forward to seeing you, hearing from you, speaking with you, and sharing life with you every week. I will see you next week. This is your boy, Patrick Irvin.